Chapter 27. Baterna Logelia hurried back down the hallway to her office, determined not to be late for her next meeting. She had just ended an hour-long meeting about the scarcity of critical medical supplies, a meeting during which she could not offer even a guess when the Ruhar fleet would resume escorting cargo ships to Gitanu. The ceasefire, the current ceasefire, was holding. Ground troops of both sides were staying in their designated zones, and both sides had stopped attempts to reactivate or destroy projectors. No one expected the Kristang to remain inactive for long. Her next meeting had been squeezed onto her calendar that very morning at the request of the chief administrator. Baterna would have appreciated more advance notice, but as the deputy administrator, she did as her boss requested. Waiting in her office was Tone Logan, a senior engineer who had come to Gitanu to maintain the planet's 6 reactors. He had come to Gitanu expecting to remain for 5 years, and then he had gotten stuck on the planet when the wormhole shift occurred and the Kristang arrived. Baterna liked Tone. He was always cheery and pleasant. He also always let it be known that he couldn't wait to leave the backwater planet. Why meeting with Tone that morning was so important, Baterna couldn't imagine, although she braced herself for bad news. Reactors shutting down due to lack of spare parts? Some other infrastructure problem? No. Tone had been investigating a projector for the past week. Bad news about those? Administrator. Tone stood as she came into the office. He offered her the palm-sliding handshake typical of the Ruhar, and after exchanging greetings, she asked him to sit. He did, after closing her door and making sure it was securely shut. Would you like kla? She offered the Ruhar's favorite hot beverage. No, I've been living on kla the past few days. Surely you didn't have to fly all the way here to talk with me, she said. The man looked tired, like he hadn't slept in days. I have been following your reports about the projectors. Yes, he said wearily. We have made considerable progress. Our initial assumption that the projectors were installed by the Kristang have been confirmed. It is greatly troubling that we lived here for so long with those projectors practically under our feet and we knew nothing about them. You lived here with them, Tone thought to himself. I just work here. Then he regretted his uncharitable thought. Gitanu had become his home sometime along the way. It is troubling, he agreed with a nod. Administrator, I will get straight to the point. 4 days ago, we were examining a projector, one of those used in the initial attack. It was depleted of energy, so we considered it a good candidate for close inspection. As I said, we confirmed it was manufactured and installed by Kristang. While we were conducting a scan of the area, we detected something. Then we picked up an energy signature that wasn't there before. We believe that somehow our scans caused a dormant object to activate. It was half buried. Unfortunately, the people who recovered it did not take the time to preserve the site, so we have lost the ability to determine how it got there or how long it had been in that spot. The reason that I came here to speak with you in person is the sensitive nature of what we discovered. He paused to take a breath, and his face came alive. Whatever deep weariness he was feeling fell away. It is an Elder Power tap, and this one is functioning perfectly. An Elder Power tap. Functional? Baterna Logelia asked, stunned. It is producing power. Tone nodded, and Baterna could feel his excitement. It has a steady output of roughly 24 kilowatts. We hooked it up to a capacitor, and it was putting out 3 megawatts and climbing rapidly before we disconnected it. We were afraid the power flow would blow the capacitor and damage the power tap. This is incredible. Astonishing. Tone agreed. We can hardly believe it, and we're working with it. Administrator, that is not all we found. Another power tap? Her mind was spinning. I wish. Tone shook his head, but retained a wide grin. That would be asking too much of fate. No, what we found is potentially almost as valuable. We think we have a functioning pair of Elder communications nodes. A pair? She guessed at the significance of the word he had used. They're linked? Yes, 2 of them. We found one here, close to where the power tap was buried. When the power tap became active, We detected signals beneath the ground and discovered a comm node. We sent a signal through it, hoping there might be another one nearby. When we didn't get a response, we were about to set it aside to look at later, as so many comm nodes had proven to be useless junk. Then we received a signal from Commodore Ferlant. They detected our signal 87 light minutes away on the other side of the star. There is another comm node out there floating in space. Administrator, it is linked to the comm node here. Signals pass both ways through the comm nodes instantaneously. Faster than light? Better. As I said, the signal transmission is instantaneous, zero time lag. As you can imagine, Commodore Ferlant is extremely excited. He has the other comm node aboard a ship, and they are bringing it here. It will be a slow trip. We are concerned that a jump would break the connection between nodes, so the ship is traveling through normal space. Is there any bandwidth restriction? Tone Logan grinned. Not that we can detect yet. It seems to be unlimited. The Ruhar had experimented with quantum entanglement for remote communications, but the pairing was short-lived, and the bandwidth so narrow that the technology was almost useless for practical communications. Why would one node be in space and another down here? Baterna asked, puzzled. My guess? I think both nodes were aboard an Elder starship. It was known that an Elder starship had crashed on Gitanu. Salvaging that wreck was the reason the Black Tree clan of the Kristang had originally come to the planet. Before the ship's orbit degraded, it ejected one of the nodes. The other remained aboard the ship. Baterna leaned back in her chair and closed her eyes, savoring the moment. Her planet, her home, now possessed one of the most valuable objects in the galaxy, and not just a power tap. Gitanu was now home to a working pair of comm nodes. Forgive me. This is rather incredible. I feel the same way. When I first heard about it, I assumed that someone had misidentified an artifact, or that we had found yet another non-functional object that would sit in a laboratory as a curiosity. It wasn't that I was afraid to hope we had truly found a functional power tap. I simply did not believe it could be true. Even now, I can barely believe it. This does answer a question, she said with a smile that teased up one side of her mouth. What is that? The question of who told the humans about the projectors. Major Perkins and her team thought their information came from a group of native Ruhar who knew we planned to trade away this planet. She chose her words carefully because Tone had not been born on Gitanu and did not consider the planet to be his home. To him, Gitanu was a backwater world that was nothing more than a necessary assignment to further his career, a step on a ladder. Once he stepped above Gitanu, he did not intend to ever return. If the wormhole shift had not happened, the Kristang would never have taken the planet back, and Tone would have moved on to a new and better assignment years before. Moved away, and missed a discovery that would make his reputation and career. That explanation never made sense to us. Major Perkins may have legitimately thought she was dealing with native Ruhar. I don't doubt that. You finding a power tap provides a more likely story, she said. She knew that Tone himself had not discovered the power tap, had not even been the person who recognized its potential. But the man would now be moving up in the hierarchy, and Baterna knew it paid to flatter such people and cultivate their friendship. I believe that the mysterious benefactor who revealed the projectors to Perkins was not Ruhar at all. I think it was Kristang. Tone snorted skeptically. The Kristang are a fractious species, but why would they attack their own ships? Not their ships, she explained. That battle group belongs to the Swift Arrow Clan. We now know that the projectors were installed by the Black Tree Clan before our people came here, and long before the Swift Arrows first arrived following the wormhole shift. I suspect there is a Black Tree agent aboard one of the Swift Arrow ships. One of the ships that was not hit by a projector, of course. That makes some bit of sense, Tone agreed. The Kristang are more passionate about fighting each other than they are about fighting us. But what would the Black Trees gain from helping us keep Gitanu? Their goal is not to help us. It is to prevent the Swift Arrows from gaining an advantage. The Swift Arrows have suspected that after the Black Trees left, there were still valuable Elder artifacts on Gitanu. I do not think the swift arrows would have sent a battle group here because our climate is good for agriculture, she added with sarcasm. The Black Trees knew Getanu still held secrets, and they must have been afraid of a rival clan gaining an advantage. The Black Trees weren't worried about us finding Elder artifacts because they knew that we stopped looking for them a long time ago. We got lucky finding that power tap. We weren't looking for it. Tone shrugged, admitting she was right. Recognizing the value of an accidental discovery, she said to soothe the man's ego, can be more important than a deliberate search. Administrator, you really think the Black Trees did this because they preferred the risk of having that power tap than for it to be possessed by a rival clan? I do. Although, I think it more likely that the Black Trees expected we would never find it. Then, someday, when circumstances change, the Black Trees could take an opportunity to come back here themselves. Our intelligence reports that currently the Black Trees are busy preparing for a major civil war against the Fire Dragon Clan. The Black Trees lack the resources right now to mount a campaign to retake this planet. That will not always be the case. Tone shook his head slowly in astonishment. This damned war has gone on for so long that I am no longer surprised by anything the Kristang do. If you're right about this, then our fleet needs to establish a permanent, strong presence here. Getanu would be the focus of major efforts to recover Elder artifacts, likely for a generation or more. Researchers would come to the planet, bolstering the population and industrial infrastructure. Getanu and its secrets would become a high-value target for the enemy. Certainly, the fleet would need to station a battle group there, or more. Starship servicing facilities would need to be built in orbit, and once those facilities were established, the fleet could rotate battle groups through, maintaining a constant presence. The Jirapha were likely to station ships in the area also. The Ruhar would install their own hidden projectors. The planet would be surrounded by a cloud of stealth hunter-killer satellites, and satellites that could project a damping field to trap enemy ships. Getanu would soon have the defenses of a high-population planet. Once those defenses were in place, the federal government would want to maximize the return on their investment, so they would encourage people to move there. More people would require more infrastructure, which required people to build infrastructure, creating a cycle. Sleepy agricultural Getanu was on the verge of experiencing booming growth. At some point, whether they found more functional Elder artifacts there would become irrelevant to the status of the planet. Kaling knows? Baterna asked. Yes, Tone nodded. I told him late last night after Commodore Ferlant's coded message arrived. The Chief Administrator asked me to tell you personally as soon as possible this morning. Now she regretted not telling her staff to move her morning appointments around so she could speak with Tone sooner. Has the federal government been informed yet? She asked. It was too soon yet for the government on the Ruhar homeworld to know about the astonishing developments on Getanu. Commodore Ferlant would need to dispatch a ship to carry the message to a passing Jirapha star carrier. Her question was whether the federal government's representatives on Getanu had been informed. The discovery of a working power tap would surely cause the federal government to cancel negotiations to hand the planet to the Kristang. Discovery of working comm nodes would do the same. The fact that both precious items had been found on Getanu would send a shockwave through the government. The first thing that Baterna expected to happen would be for the Ruhar fleet to arrive in force. She expected two, possibly three, full battle groups to take up position over the planet. After Ruhar ships filled the skies, only then would the discovery be announced to the public. What? She asked, reacting to the strained smile on Tone's face. No, our federal friends have not been informed yet. The Chief Administrator thought you would enjoy performing that task personally. It was Baterna's turn to smile broadly. She would enjoy that. She would certainly enjoy that very much.
Awesome! Yes! That's great! Skippy exulted.
Would you like to clue me in, Skippy? I asked in a peevish tone. What is awesome? Through the Skippytel network, we had been listening to the Burgermeister's conversation, despite the extensive security features of her office. The sound had been muddy. Her voice came across much deeper than I remembered. That didn't matter. We heard everything we needed to hear.
Joe, the cover story we used with Major Perkins was that MB was a group of native Ruhar. Thank you, Sergeant Adams, for that idea.
That's what I get paid for, Adams replied with a grin.
But I've been concerned that the Ruhar would look into our cover story and realize it is rather thin, so I've been trying to think of another story we could feed the Ruhar government. Actually, you should have been trying to think of a better cover story. That's your job, Joe. I do everything else around here. Now we don't need to do anything. But Turner Logelia thought up a perfect cover story all on her own, and she has already convinced herself that it must be true.
You mean because she thinks the mysterious benefactor is the Kristang Black Tree Clan? I asked skeptically.
Come on, Skippy. The Kristang are hateful lizards, but would one clan do that to another? The Black Trees will just deny the whole thing. They know they didn't do it.
Yes, Joe, one Kristang clan would screw another clan like that, and they do it with great enthusiasm. Of course, the Black Trees will publicly deny everything. The other clans, especially the Swift Arrows, will publicly condemn the supposed actions of the Black Trees. Privately, the Black Trees will be jumping up and down, high-fouring each other because the Swift Arrows have lost a major opportunity, and in private, the other clan leaders will admire the Black Trees for screwing the Swift Arrows so effectively.
Shit, they really are hateful lizards. I shook my head.
That they are, Joe, Skippy agreed.
Once the Kristang learned that a functional Elder power tap was found on Paradise, and a pair of working comm nodes, the other Kristang will be furious at the Black Trees for allowing the Ruhar to have such powerful devices. However, again, the other clans will privately agree that the Black Trees would have been harmed even more if the Swift Arrows had possession of those devices. Admiral Kekrondo of the Swift Arrow Task Force will be tearing his ships apart to find a Black Tree agent. That means his task force will be distracted for several weeks at least, and they will not present a threat to Paradise. So, everybody wins, Skippy said scornfully. Except the Swift Arrows, of course. They got totally screwed any way you look at it.
Darn, I said with a frown.
Skippy, I feel just terrible for the Swift Arrows, I lied. The Swift Arrows were responsible for me wearing the silver eagles of a colonel. They had also ordered me to kill civilians and planned to execute me.
I would like to send them a nice sympathy note.
A card, sir? Adams asked, surprised.
No, I said with a grin. I thought we'd write the note on the casing of a nuke and deliver that to them.
That is not exactly a hallmark moment, Joe, Skippy chuckled.
It would be for us, Adams said with a wink.
I have one question, Skippy, I said.
Only one. Considering your general lack of knowledge about, well, pretty much anything, I find it surprising that you only have one question, Skippy replied.
I ignored his insult.
You said the Kristang would be high-fouring each other.
Yeah, so? The lizards have four fingers on each hand instead of five. Joe, humans are not the only species that uses celebratory hand gestures.
Duh.
Oh. Okay, that's what I thought.
We hung around Paradise for another 49 days, with me fretting every day that somehow the Kristang would learn the Ruhar had found a working power tap and a pair of comm nodes. Skippy was fairly frantic at the unforgivably poor communications security of the Ruhar. Even with Admiral Kekrondo's ships several light minutes away, and considering the notoriously crappy sensors of Kristang ships, they could hardly have failed to learn the secret if Skippy hadn't been helping the Ruhar. Every day he had to intercept hundreds of messages before the Kristang could listen in. There were two chatty Ruhar working on the power tap engineering team who were constantly sending barely encrypted messages back and forth. Skippy finally resorted to frying both of their Z-phones and computers twice before they got the idea that maybe they should not be talking about secrets on unsecure equipment. Somehow, due to constant diligence by Skippy, but mostly due to what he claimed must have been a miracle, the Kristang never did discover the great secret of Paradise. During one particularly bad day, Skippy had a suggestion.
Hey, Joe, how about I create a daily summary of top-secret Ruhar communications and send it directly to Admiral Kekrondo? That would be more convenient for everyone involved, especially for me.
I hoped he was joking about that. On the 17th day, a Ruhar battle group jumped in. This battle group was configured for heavy planetary defense, being centered around a pair of battleships. The battleships were slow and clumsy, but they had impressive shields and armaments. The Kristang moved their remaining ships further away from Paradise and loudly protested the Ruhar violation of the ceasefire agreement. The Ruhar retorted that the new ships had not fired a shot, therefore the ceasefire was still in effect.
And if Admiral Kikrondo's few remaining ships wished to test them, the new Ruhar battleships would be happy to show him what a real ceasefire violation looks like. 2 days later, a second Ruhar battle group with a trio of heavy cruisers showed up at the party. On day 23, the Ruhar federal government announced that negotiations to trade the planet Gitanu were suspended. This was news to most of the native Ruhar on Gitanu. Until then, most of them had not known there were any negotiations. That same day, the Ruhar announced they had found valuable elder artifacts on Gitanu. 12 days after that, Admiral Kikrondu's remaining ships accepted a humiliating offer from the Giratha for a ride home. On day 38, we got a surprise. The Ruhar found a real comm node on Paradise, a comm node that even Skippy hadn't known about. The thing didn't work, of course. It did greatly encourage the Ruhar in the belief that Gitanu could be a treasure trove of elder artifacts. And that began the endgame of our plan to rescue UNEF.
Yes, we accomplished the same effect with our testing. Tone Logan didn't bother to keep the irritation from his voice. Since the federal government experts had arrived on Gitanu, he had lost control of the Elder Power Tap and the pair of communications nodes. The nodes were now being tested by the military. A report Tone saw the previous day stated that they were now experiencing instantaneous transmission across a distance of 3 light hours. Unlike Tone's initial assessment, the bandwidth of signals that could be pushed through the nodes was not unlimited. The nodes experienced data dropouts when the energy of signals pushed through the nodes exceeded 1.43 megawatts, which was essentially unlimited in practical terms. 1 megawatt could carry the entire compressed message traffic of the Ruhar homeworld. Having the military take the comm nodes away from him didn't much bother Tone. He was primarily a power plant engineer. What he cared about was the power tap, that nearly magical source of endless power. In the history of the Ruhar civilization, they had only ever possessed 2 working power taps before. The first power tap had been discovered by accident on a small moon of the second world the Ruhar had ever colonized. At the time, the Ruhar had agreed to the Giraptha's request to turn the precious power tap over to them. Lacking sufficient technology to analyze or use elder technology, the Ruhar back then had gotten the best deal they could, giving the power tap to the Giraptha in exchange for a Giraptha commitment to support the Ruhar colonizing a third planet. That was a very good deal for the then-young Ruhar civilization's ambitions for expanding into space. The second power tap was found aboard the wreckage of an elder ship, found orbiting a young, hot white dwarf star. The Ruhar had expended immense resources to recover the scattered wreckage of the elder ship, losing 3 Ruhar ships in the process. That power tap was kept by the Ruhar and currently resided on their homeworld. Within 4 decades of it being recovered, that second power tap was put to use. It now powered part of the homeworld's defense network. If the defense net was fully active, the power tap could provide 16 gigawatts of energy. Tone knew the power tap would not remain on the backwater world of Gitanu forever, and he knew that his time for being in charge of the research was over already. He even knew that the experts might actually know a bit more than he did. They didn't have to be so damned arrogant about it. When they arrived, they had acted appalled that he and his team had done anything with the precious power tap. That Tone had gotten the tap to provide continuous power without the assistance of experts had scandalized the federal team. Essentially, they had patted him on the head like a small child, praised him for his work to date, and shooed him away from the research facility. It had taken direct intervention by the planet's chief administrator for Tone to be allowed to even view the testing. He still would certainly never be allowed to touch anything, nor was his advice listened to.
"I'm telling you, we already ran that test successfully 5 times, Tone said with great exasperation.
"You did that with your software," one of the federal scientists remarked. "We are using a considerably more sophisticated analysis tool."
What infuriated Tone more than the man's insufferable arrogance was that the man was not even aware he was being insulting. To the scientist, what he said was obvious, and any intelligent person would appreciate the facts. At least that meant, Tone thought, that the scientists thought he was somewhat intelligent.
"So you are actually testing your software?" Tone said with intentional sarcasm. "I understand now."
"Yes," the man had entirely missed the sarcasm of Tone's remark. "We will establish a baseline."
Tone rolled his eyes and decided to get a fresh cup of hot claw, as the experiment was not scheduled to go above the microwatt level until that afternoon. It was that afternoon when things got interesting. By mid-afternoon, the power tap's output was a steady 10 kilowatts. So far, the results of the federal scientists exactly matched the results Tone's team had achieved 5 times. Rather than praising Tone and his team, the scientists remarked that Tone had been remarkably lucky with his crude software, equipment, and techniques. The next phase of testing achieved different results from what Tone's team had seen. One of the scientists said with concern.
Dial it back. Bring the input frequency to 6.2, please.
What is it? Tone craned his neck to see over the scientist's shoulder.
Nothing. Please do not interfere, he said to Tone.
The scientist then spoke into his microphone.
It's still increasing. Cut input power.
Yes, now. Shut it down.
What's the problem?
Tone leaned in to almost shove the man out of the way.
What the hell did you idiots do?
Tone shouted in alarm. The power tap's output should have been less than 20 kilowatts. Instead, the meter showed the power tap was at 400 kilowatts, and as Tone watched, it climbed over 500 kilowatts.
Nothing, the man protested. We didn't do anything.
This is your damned software, Tone said through gritted teeth. Turn it off.
We did. There's no input signal.
The man pointed to the screen showing a flat line where the input signal indicator was. Tone watched in alarm as the power tap's generation exceeded 1 megawatt, then 1.5 megawatts. 2 megawatts.
I think we should consider getting out of here, he said quietly.
Uh-oh, Joey, Skippy said. There has been an unfortunate glitch in the Ruhar testing of our power tap. It has somehow gotten out of control.
Darn, I hate it when that happens. This is a puzzle. I can't explain it.
That is truly terrible, Skippy, I replied, while concentrating on the crossword puzzle I had been working on most of the day.
Any chance they can stop it?
Ha! Skippy laughed.
About the same odds as you finishing that crossword puzzle.
Seriously, Skippy, is there any chance they could somehow stop the power tap from exploding?
Sadly, no.
Skippy didn't sound sad at all.
Not this time.
Huh. Some of those idiots haven't gotten the idea that they had best get the hell out of there. I'll temporarily goose power output to 1.21 gigawatts.
Did that work? I asked, now paying attention. The crossword was stupid anyway. Doubly so because Adams had solved it in like 20 minutes during breakfast that morning.
I don't want any casualties, Skippy.
If someone is monumentally stupid, does that count as a casualty, Joe?
That's a gray area. Depends on how stupid.
I'll give them 10 minutes to board the last air transport out. Let's see what 5 megawatts does.
Ah, they got the message that time.
Okay, the last of them is running to get out. Aircraft engines are warming up.
Tone Logan was 50 kilometers away in a speeding aircraft when the priceless Elder power tap exploded with a force of almost a kiloton. The blast rocked the isolated forest where the testing facility had been. Looking out the window at the developing mushroom cloud, Tone turned to the federal scientist seated next to him.
Don't worry. I am not going to say I told you so.
10 minutes later, they received the awful news that at the exact moment the power tap exploded, the pair of communications nodes stopped working. Tone shook his head.
This day just keeps getting better and better, he muttered to no one.
Now maybe he could convince the chief administrator not to let federal experts screw with toys that belong to the residents of Gitanu. Residents of Gitanu like Tone Logan. And maybe he needed to think of buying a house instead of renting. He planned to be on Gitanu for a while.
It exploded? Baterna Logelia asked, shocked.
It did, Tone Logan confirmed over the phone. It was fairly spectacular, too, like a small nuke or a high-power railgun round. We're lucky, I guess. If it hadn't exploded, it might have melted its way down to the center of the planet and caused all kinds of seismic issues with the crust.
Do you know what went wrong?
The deputy administrator of the planet asked. Tone looked around the cramped interior of the aircraft.
Administrator, he said more loudly than he needed to. You will need to ask our federal scientist experts why the test went so badly wrong.
They were all avoiding his eyes.
Do you have any idea why the comnode pair failed at the same time?
At this time, no, I do not, Tone admitted. I do not think the power tap was providing energy to the comnodes remotely, although that could be possible. More likely, the explosion of the power tap caused some sort of effect in space-time that disrupted the connection between the two comnodes. The deputy administrator of the planet said a very bad word.
This is a setback, she said, with great understatement.
Yes, Administrator Logelia.
He lowered his voice.
Is there any chance that our federal friends will now pack up their ships and go home?
The Krestang Task Force's remaining ships had not yet departed the Gitanu system. If the Ruhar fleet left, the planet would have to rely again on a limited number of projectors, and now the Krestang knew exactly where each one of those projectors were.
No, she laughed bitterly. No, that will not happen. I was talking with the fleet admiral this morning. She spent an hour telling me how the events on Tiny Gitanu have caused the Jarraptha to shift their forces in the sector. They launched a major new offensive 2 days ago. The Theranin and Krestang are going to be very busy for many months. Also, I think the federal government will be embarrassed enough about this fiasco that they will be extremely eager to explore every bit of this planet to find more Elder artifacts. To answer your question, the fleet is here to stay.
That is great news, Tone breathed a sigh of relief. Administrator Logelia, one more thing, please.
What?
That other comnode we just found. Could you make sure our federal scientist friends don't mess with it?
I will keep it under my pillow if I have to, Baterna said with determination.
Nobody touches it until you get here.